This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
You know what? I'm not going to do it this week. After listening to your failed attempts last week, Douglas, I'm not even going to bother trying to go for my usual opening gambit. I think it's boring. Nobody likes it anymore. And we don't give any news and opinion on the weekend's rugby action. We are an ad hoc rugby podcast that turn up when we want now because we don't really give a shit. So, welcome back to the All Over Podcast. Hello to all the new listeners, all the South Africans that will be listening after Phil's badger baiting today around scrum time. But we'll get on to that. I'm joined this week by the smaller of the Eustace brothers, probably the least talented. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
I'm feeling quite
mischievous. I'm not going to argue with any of that.
I know. It's poor, isn't it? Really poor from me. And I'm also joined by Great Britain's number one Mike Friday tribute act, Dougie Andrews. Welcome. He's on mute as well. Like, he muted himself because he was trying to be clever and they can't.
How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you.
Sevens.
Fresh back from Doha.
I'm just on my way out there for the.
You go to Dubes.
Well, I'm not, but Mike is.
Mike's going to Dubes. Oh, you're not. That's a shame. Where are you going this weekend?
Bristol.
I mean, Wolverhampton 1 week, Bristol the next. Douglas knows how to live.
That sounded like Chicago's verse.
For those of you, I mean, pretty much everyone that listens to this now has heard the rugby song. I used to work in Chicago's the old department store. I mean, what's the best rugby song of that nature, do you reckon? Do you reckon it's Chicago's?
Yeah, Chicago's, just purely because everyone knows it.
Classic.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favourites was
Yogi Bear.
Yogi Bear. Has anybody seen JC? Have you heard that one? Not since Easter Monday, riding on a donkey. Has anybody seen JC?
No.
No?
I did enjoy the is no use to anyone number that we sang after
that. That's has anybody seen JC?
Oh, I didn't know that. Sorry.
No, is it? Hold on. He's so good, he's divine, he turned water into wine. Has anybody seen JC?
No, he's no bloody use to anyone.
That one. He ought to be publicly shat on and he ought to be publicly shot. That one. I mean, they're all classics, aren't they? But Chicago's is probably the most famous. I don't know what took me down that rabbit hole, but it was enjoyable nonetheless. If you've got any verses to either Chicago or has anybody seen JC, tweet us and we'll retweet the best.
No one's going to tweet.
No, they're not. And I'll retweet them all. In the hope of offending as many people as humanly possible. Because I'm kind of at that level right now. Right.
The level of your checked out is just off the charts.
I mean,
you could not give less of a shit about doing this anymore, could you?
Correct. And you know,
I think you'd rather file a tax return.
If, and it's a big if, and we'll come on to it. But if last Saturday hadn't have been such a monumental abomination, there's a chance I would have just canned this whole fucking thing and deleted Twitter.
It was shambolic, devoid of ideas, equal parts desperate and lackadaisical.
You talking about the rugby or Russ's tweeting?
Both.
Ineffective. Yeah. Ill-judged.
Ginger.
Yeah.
A lot of huff and puff without any actual result.
Yeah.
Yeah. Offensive.
Bullshit.
Bullshit, yeah.
Just bullshit.
So to warn everyone before we get started, this is probably going to get relatively ranty and be extremely moany. If you've never listened to Mall Over before, we do, to a certain extent, try to remain positive. We do, to a certain extent, try and remain unbiased and factual. No, we don't remain factual. That's utter bullshit. We try and give honest opinion based on what we see as actual rugby fans. And we do, wherever possible, try not to jump up and down on referees' faces because, you know, it's not really the done thing. However, before we get into how bad England were, and I want to make it clear, England did not lose this game at the weekend because of Angus Gardner. They did not. That is a fact. They didn't. But what I will say is, from a fan's perspective, that was one of the worst international refereeing performances I think I've ever seen. And there are a number of reasons why, but the inconsistency of decision making, I couldn't get my head around it. And I was so, and the more it was happening, the more I was getting wound up by it. I mean, that second half, there was a number of scrums, and we can use the scrum as a prime example. We had a number of scrums where England were penalised for being unstable, and South Africa given a free kick on both their own and South Africa's put-in. When South Africa happened to be unstable at their put-in and England's put-in, it was a reset. When South Africa were boring in and losing their feet behind, it was England's hinging that was an issue. When Faf de Klerk is trying to decapitate Marcus Smith, nothing was mentioned, nothing was said. And I think this is all down primarily to officials being so shit scared of having a little video dossier presented on them by Razzy Erasmus he didn't know how to referee the game, and it was so bad that it just became laughable at the end, because you just knew exactly what was going to happen. Now, for all the South Africans that are saying, this is all sour grapes about England losing and your scrum got marmalized like it did in the World Cup final and you lost again, and fine, we lost. It's not sour grapes. I know we lost because England was shitter than South Africa. But I'm not coming on here and saying, it was the referee that caused this and it was the referee that caused that. I'm just saying the guy was fucking shit. Do either of you two want to say anything about Angus Gardner before we move on to England?
I just want to say you or me, Ben.
You go on, Doug. You'll probably say what I'm going to say.
I think the thing that offends me most about Angus Gardner is his voice.
Oh, you've been boring in there, mate.
He sounds like...
sounded like fucking...
Australian Kermit.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Or Fuzzy Bear.
Yeah.
Waka waka, you were hinging.
No, he wasn't great, but... There were 15 worst performances on that pitch, and there was one performance in the coaching box, which I would say put everyone in their place. So I'm not going to blame Angus Gardner. That's what South Africans do. I do wonder the combined effect of Razzie's bullshit is. I don't know, mate. I don't know. I don't think you blame Gardner for that.
I mean, I'd like to think, and probably Angus Gardner would probably like to think that he just had an off day rather than Razzie was affecting him. And hopefully we, you know, it's not giving Razzie the credit, if that's the right word, he doesn't deserve to say that. You're absolutely right, Doug, that I'm not going to get upset about the referee on Saturday. I'd rather get upset when the referee costs a match. But he could have given us a penalty every 2 minutes and we probably still wouldn't have won. The only one that I think...
Oh, yeah, because when we did have penalties, we had, missed for them. Some reason, Owen Farrell shanking and past the post. But we've got one of the most ice-cool kickers on planet Earth and the actual fly half being told to mind his place and let the grown-ups kick.
Yeah. I mean, the one I think is it does bear mentioning is Faf de Klerk's lucky that he missed, because
Faf de Klerk does that all the time.
Yeah,
all the time, and he's been getting away with it for years because he's little.
Yeah, he was definitely aiming to take him out there. Yeah. You know, he might not have been aiming for his head, but he was definitely, you know, it was a cheap shot from the blind side. You know, you could see that in the first replay. So I think he is lucky he didn't catch him, because if he had been a split second earlier, he would have caught him right in the side of the head. But, you know, he didn't, so there's not much the ref can do about it. But, no. You know, he should cut that out.
Fucking Bucks Fizz wannabe. I'm glad he got injured.
I can't stand him. Yeah.
You know what I like about him is every time he comes on the screen, I'm compelled to say, she's cute.
I mean, when he was at Sale, I started to think to myself, like, maybe I'm just overreacting. Maybe it's just the haircut. Maybe he's just got an annoying face. And as soon as he played in that South Africa A against the Lions, I was just like, God, I can't stand the bloke. And, you know, it was stupid by Johnny Hill, but I don't really blame him.
You can understand why Johnny Hill has done it. De Klerk has made he's made 3 square meals a day out of that.
It's a shame he didn't manage to drop him into row C of the crowd or something, but, you know.
That would have been better. But still, brainless. And we can add that to the list of brainless things that England did. Starting, you know, potentially with selection. Where do we go with Eddie Jones and his selection policy? Because,
mate, we've been saying this for 3.5 years. Where do we go with Eddie Jones? We go in, and ironically, the answer is we're going absolutely nowhere with Eddie Jones.
Well, we're going backwards now.
We are absolutely going backwards. Every other team has moved on apart from England. It's like he's spent the last 2.5 years going, I need to freshen up this England side. You remember when he first dropped Macko and all those guys, it was all, we need to evolve as a team. We need to do this. We need to do that. And basically he's got to 8 months away from a World Cup. He's shattered brick and he's brought everyone back.
Yeah, and it
makes no sense. The players, like that, the discussion we had on our Twitter group about, he must be the only person in England who thinks Alex Coles is the best flanker in England. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, that decision. Just don't understand it.
I agree.
Yeah.
And then to take, so did you notice he took Coles off, right? Instead of putting Simmons on, he took Coles off and put Ribbons on and moved Itoje to 6.
I just don't understand it. Because it's not like those players are of such imposing physical nature. We spend every week when we talk about Premiership rugby bemoaning Saints for being soft.
Yeah.
and then we're putting two Saints players in against the most physical team in the world. Why are we trying to beat them at their game? Why are we trying to do what they do when we've got such unique talents in our player pool? He's just completely myopic. He's completely obsessed with his own genius. We may not make it out of the groups of the World Cup because we don't have a clue what we're doing. There's obviously a power struggle in our halfbacks.
That's nobody been an issue.
We're rudderless because Farrell's been moved inside to accommodate a player that's effectively his replacement. It's a mess. It's a real mess.
It is a mess. So
we're just lucky that Wales are a bigger mess.
Well, yeah.
He reminds me a bit of someone who's been on Twitter too much. But I know he's not on Twitter, but you know, like someone gets on Twitter and they just get like hung up on a subject and they have to be right about it. You know, like Lawrence Fox.
Oh, you mean like, I don't know, just picking two random names out of the ether, Josh Gardner and Squid Rugby?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but you know, it's like he's like got into an art. It's a real life Twitter argument with the rugby press and rugby social media, and probably everyone else in rugby. And he's now just doubling down on. I'm going to win with a big second row at six, and I'm going to win with Farrell at 12. And it's like nothing can change his mind now. And it's like an anti-vaxxer on Twitter or something like that, isn't it? It's just he's just gone in hard now, and you're just not going to change his mind. And it's almost like the only thing that's going to change his mind is when he goes off and manages the USA for the next World Cup or something like that. So because I think it's not going to change now.
No, absolutely not. I understand that, but like, what I want to understand is, what is his plan? What is this mystical thing that he's trying to do that he won't let anyone know about? You know, it's like one of those builders who says, "Oh yeah, I'll be round next week. Yeah, I'll be there," and they never come.
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
Half built wall.
He's sort of trying to give the impression that he has a plan, but you have to give some indication of any kind of plan for anyone to believe you. Like at the moment, it's just like run a couple of phases and then mill around a bit until the opposition has sat in your pocket and you drop the ball. And I don't think that's the plan, but you know, it could be.
So just taking the back row, for instance. So on Friday night, there was Kenningham and Dom Brandt for Harlequins. I know he's looked at Kenningham before. Dom Brandt's obviously been involved. Ludlow for Gloucester. Then Saturday, there weren't too many. Ben Curry wasn't playing. I mean, we've literally got a clone of one of the best back row in the world. Then on Sunday, for Leicester, there were two young guys playing for Leicester who, at this point last year, and potentially through the Six Nations, they were sort of the great white hope, weren't they? You remember when Ollie Chesson played and everyone goes, "Oh, this guy looks good." Another 5.5, potentially. The same with George Martin. Came out of nowhere, played a couple of test matches off the bench, random training squad. Oh, where's he now? Not even getting any sort of look in. There's quite literally two Willises that could do a good job. You know, the rotting carcass of Benny Vilopola, who played in all of the... Simmons played at eight in... Did Simmons play at eight against Japan?
Yeah.
But other than that, like, Billy Vilopola, he's... so far done.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean,
there's so many more dynamic options. I mean, you could play Lewis Ludlam and even Aaron Hinckley, who's been amazing for Saints.
Ben Earl is the name that springs to
Earl,
my mind.
Dave Ewers. But Earl, like Earl is the one, isn't he? Earl and Jack Willis. Imagine having a dynamic back row of, you know, Curry, Willis, and Earl.
Or Curry, Earl, and Dom Brandt.
Yeah.
To give it some balance.
Yeah. No, no problem with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, the only sort of hope I have, and it's probably a forlorn hope because, no, it's not the only hope I have. I'm talking rugby here.
just in life, the only hope I've got.
Yeah. Is, you know, but it's someone he's looked at and not like the look of. But, you know, I think by the time of the World Cup, Mercer should be eligible. But, you know, he played him for half a game against Japan, didn't like what he saw and never picked him again. But
Shepherd's crooked him as well, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's a guy who's always looked like an international to me. You know, but he's not, maybe he's not a Billy type. He's not going to necessarily smash a hole where there isn't one, but he's a bit more like Dom Brandt where he might find one. You know, it's sometimes, like you say, it's infuriating when some players have had a lot of chances and been binned when they've actually looked like they might be able to step in the side, like Earl has, or some haven't been given hardly any chance at all. And, you know, and then other players have just disappeared that have been around for ages. So what is his plan? I don't know. I mean, Freeman, he was gone after a half.
Yeah.
And
what frustrates you more, Ben? So you mentioned Freeman there. The poor guy didn't even get a chance to have a ball in his hand to attack. He plays in a Saints side.
Yeah, I mean, they were saying
go forward ball, right? I've seen people openly criticize Manu Tuilagi for his performances in the autumn. The guy hasn't even had the ball. How can you criticize him when he's not getting the ball?
And
there's power struggle between Smith and Farrell. And we've been down this road. We were down this road before the last World Cup. We're going down the road with Ford and Farrell. We're going down this road again, right? If Farrell plays, he has to be 10. And actually, it showed against, yes, we were chasing the game and it was a little bit. But as soon as we had Farrell at 10 and a couple of centres, we actually looked like we could go forward. And I know Slade made a couple of errors, but he scored the try. You know, Noel was decent when he came on, but like we look like we've got a bit of an attacking structure with Ford and Farrell with Smith and Farrell. It may as well be Ford and Farrell of 3 years ago. It's the same. Yeah. It's exactly the same. And you can't, you know, I've said it over and over again, Marcus Smith plays very well for Harlequins when he's got a big cunt inside him and a big cunt outside him. That's what he does. Sorry for the C-bombs, but...
I've got to stop you there. I think that's too simple. I don't think Marcus Smith is allowed to play with the freedom that he does at Quins. He's not allowed to make decisions, mate.
I agree.
They play to such a rigid structure.
Yeah. Yeah.
They play to such a rigid structure... And he's got such a big personality outside him. We won't let him stray from that. And who wants to make the decisions? And let's be frank, he's probably calling the plays.
Yeah.
Marcus Smith is effectively just a very well-paid pivot.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fair comment. But equally, you see the game plan that Harkins play, and Smith is allowed to run those plays, yes, because he's not got somebody outside him telling him what to do, but equally he's got defenders that are being fixed by a big 12 and a big 8 either side of him that he can go either way or he can miss them both. With England, England is so easy to defend against because they've got nobody inside that's carrying hard enough, and they definitely haven't got somebody outside Smith that's carrying hard enough.
I just don't agree, because you think about the amount of times that you have Tuilagi running first phase ball and you have Vunipola on the inside of him. He's got the two biggest cunts in England.
He didn't have Tuilagi running off of first phase ball.
But once, they used it once off the first line out and it worked, and then they never did it again. partially because they couldn't get the ball out of a scrum.
Well, I'd also argue it's because Farrell plays at 12 and he won't let that happen. He wants to have the ball and be making decisions. I think there's an issue with Farrell wanting to be the main man and it affecting the whole of the game plan because it has to go through him. So Smith effectively is just taking the ball and dishing it to Farrell.
To Farrell to make the play. I agree.
So we're basically not doing anything until Farrell gets the ball. So we're limited on what options we can run from. Like, how do you run an entire game plan from 12?
It's quite clear that you can't. But we've said this for years when it was George Ford in exactly the same position. If Owen Farrell plays, he has to play 10. And it's clear.
What I don't understand is how three fucking idiots in their front rooms can see this, but the most highly paid man in world rugby doesn't get it. Despite it being there in black and white and with the best team of analysts and coaching, and I just don't understand. And like, he must know that the public opinion has turned against him. So why not just come out and say, this is what we're trying to do. We were trying to do this for the World Cup. We're trying to do this. No, it's like no one buys his bullshit because it's like, what actually are you doing? You won't tell us. And every time we watch the team play, and when people pay 200 quid to go to a South Africa match, they served up this dross week after week, game after game. And you just sort of laugh it off with your stupid, pithy interviews. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the whole building for a World Cup narrative is so tiresome.
If he was building for a World Cup, he wouldn't have dropped Billy and Mako at the end of the last cycle. What he's tried to do is build for a World Cup, but he's bricked himself and he's brought all this stuff back. And he's created so much of a problem by bringing Smith in and not giving him autonomy, having Farrell hold his hand. He doesn't know how to get out of that situation now, because if he drops Smith, he's going to get pilloried. And he feels like he can't drop Farrell because it's his captain. So he's made the rod for his own back.
I would actually have no problem with him dropping Smith and putting Smith on the bench.
I'd drop Farrell. Farrell offers nothing.
I actually think Farrell is an exceptional 10. And as a distributor, and you know, he might not be as electric as Smith on the ground, but Owen Farrell, having watched him play a couple of times for Saracens this season, with players outside him offering, you know, effective running lines, actually, he's exceptional. He's world class. He's world class 10. He's a different 10 to Marcus Smith, quite obviously, but he is a world class 10. He is not a world class 12. He's not even an international 12, I don't think, really, because what does he offer other than his goal kicking, which was not very good at the weekend? Like, as a 12, he's not playing as a 12. He's playing as a we're playing 10-10, 10-10-13, and that's the problem.
As the great American TV show The Office once said, what organization doesn't run better with two heads? Where would Catholicism be without the popes? We can't play a rugby match with two tens. You can't. You don't have two quarterbacks on the field in American football.
No. You need a decision maker. It is a nonsense.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And depending on who that is, you know, I don't care who it is. I just want one of them. Ben?
Yeah, I think the evidence is becoming clearer and clearer, isn't it? It's just confused. Everything's confused. You know, they're leaning on a basin in the bathroom. You know, it's it just gets through a couple of phases and then no one knows what they're doing. And it you're right, it could be that there's too many cooks in there trying to make decisions, whereas they all need to be singing off the same hymn sheet, don't they? You're almost better having less of a decision maker at 12 who's just going to do something simple until Smith's off the floor, you know, or Farrell's off the floor. But if they're doing different things, then it's just gonna that's creating the confusion.
But rugby time in memoriam has only had one 10, and when the 10 isn't there, you just find a way around it. You don't need two 10s. You don't have to reinvent the fact.
There's always been centers that can
play a bit of ball.
That can play and distribute, but they're not
10s
running the show. Yeah, they're not, you know, like someone like Mike Catt would just, you know, sort of just slip in and, you know, provide continuity rather than trying to run the show. So I think that was a problem. I'm almost with you. Like, I wouldn't mind if they just went with Farrell now, and then whoever takes over in a year's time can just go with Smith and we'll go from there. You know, at least, you know, with Farrell, we know what we're getting. And, you know, if we go with Smith, then he's got to, like Doug was sort of alluding to, he's got to start from scratch. He's going to have to pick, you know, decide which two centres he wants. He's going to have to decide who's going to play in the back row as well. And, you know, we've got 5 competitive games now to the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned we've only got 5 competitive games left then until after the until before the World Cup now. So we've got the Six Nations. Can we see any change? Do you think the RFU will actually do anything about it? Obviously, we briefly mentioned Wales and the fact that Pivac's head's on the block after losing to Georgia and that.
Have they done anything about anything in the last 10 years?
No, they haven't. No, but there was talk of a review due to England's poor, dismal performance. I think we're at 36% win ratio this week, or 38%, like for the year. You know, we were shit in the Six Nations. We've lost now to Argentina. We scraped a draw against New Zealand when really they threw it away, let's be honest. And we got absolutely dry reamed by South Africa.
I don't think they will. Just because it's so close, you know, he's going to go afterwards anyway, isn't he? So why pay him off? You know, and
because it's looking extremely likely that we're going to get pumped by everyone in the World Cup.
Yeah, but what I do worry about is the front row situation, because I don't think it matters who's coach or whoever it is. I don't think we've got many front rows because
we can't keep them fit.
Yeah,
the ones that managed to stay fit are fuck it. Well,
you've got those 6
rotting carcasses, you know, of the ones that they used to be.
Like, yeah, Mako. You've got those 6 players, but there's no one really battering the door down to come in, is there?
So, you know, at hooker, the 2 hookers we've got are decent.
Yeah,
they're decent. And then you've got Genge, who is, you know, arguably world class, but Sinclair is a shadow of his former self. He just kind of struts around thinking that he's amazing when I haven't seen him have a good game for, well, before the last World Cup, probably certainly since the World Cup.
I agree. Final. I think he really does think he's made it, doesn't he? He thinks he's the, yeah.
He reminds me of a bit of a shitter Joe Marler.
Yeah. And you know what? He's definitely one of those blokes that would say, well, what do you know? You've never played scrum. You've never played as a loose head or a tight head, whatever stupid position he plays. You know, he's one of those people that would just not value the opinion of people because he knows best because he's a professional rugby player.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but then we've got the likes of, and this is where we fall down. You know, Will Stewart scored a couple of tries against New Zealand, but the likes of Will Stewart, Joe Hayes, I was trying to think of some other props that have kind of Paul Hill, you know, they've been in and out. They've had chances. Do you remember, like, we've it's almost like journeyman props that we kind of wheel out for a few tests here and there and, you know, never to be seen again. I remember Mullen. It was Mullen. Did he go to Worcester in the end? Matt Mullen?
Yeah, Matt Mullen.
He hung around for a little while and never really went anywhere, you know. And it's just, we lack any sort of real grit in that position.
Yeah.
You know, like proper strong boys. I mean, Genge wants to fight people and he's tenacious and he, you know, fair play. He is a strong boy, but like proper strong boys, like the South African boys that came on were reminiscent of the Vickery, Woodman, White. Do you know what I mean? Just immovable objects as opposed to these fucking incredible athletes. I don't think props are supposed to be incredible athletes, are they? They're supposed to be Stonehenge.
Props. They're supposed to be props.
Yeah.
You know, and it's nice that they, if they've got
good at pushing
or they can carry, you know, but that's on top of their day job, isn't it? It you know, like, Phil Vickery was a good ball carrier, but he could prop. You know, you've got, I've gone blank. What's the Irish prop?
Furlong.
I mean, you know, he's good at scrummaging. He might not be the world's best scrummager, but he does his job. And then you've got the other stuff on top. Yeah. Whereas like, you know, Mako, absolutely. Yeah, he came on against New Zealand and carried brilliantly, but he's struggling to do his day job now. But there isn't anyone knocking on the door, is there? I mean, you'd say the next prop, the prop that's most unlucky to not be anywhere near the squad is Cole, Dan Cole.
How old is Dan Cole? I mean, I know he's old, about 500.
He's probably not as old as we think, because I think he was fairly young when he came into the squad. But he's got to be, you know, way into his 30s, isn't he?
35. So, and you could argue, like, I don't want to be going back, much like I didn't want to be going back to Vunipola. You know, I don't want to be going back to Joe Marler and Dan Cole either. We need to be finding new players, people to take these things forward, but to be actual props.
Mm.
You know, Harry Williams and Alec Hepburn have fallen off the face of it. If you're like Ben Moon, came on and he would just scrummage. He was just a really, really good scrummager. Didn't really want the ball, wasn't even interested in it. But Kay used to come in, do his scrummaging, went home.
I thought Harry Williams did pretty well for England. You know, he only made a few sub appearances, but I thought he always did pretty well. Hepburn was probably the opposite. I think he was just a bit too underpowered to be an international. But I thought Williams did pretty well. But I haven't seen, is he injured? Because
just can't get in. I mean, I'm trawling through the lineups at the weekend and I'm trying to find.
You've got Schoner, haven't you?
Schoner's donuts. But there's Schoner, Rapava Ruskin. But again, like his scrummaging is questionable. I mean, is he even English, Rapava Ruskin? I don't know. He's been in some squads, hasn't he?
He's English qualified. Haven't we got supposedly one of the best scrum coaches in the world as well that we poached off South Africa? How do we keep getting these coaches that are supposedly amazing coaches? They work with Eddie Jones for a year and their reputation is in tatters and they leave depressed and alone.
Yeah, never to be seen again. Yeah. It's a fair comment. Like, remember when John Mitchell came in? Remember when we had Simon Amor, the best sevens attack coach, you know, who's going to revolutionise all of our attack? Remember when, you know, all these people. And it just makes you feel like we're going to end up with Eddie Jones leaving and Richard Cockerell coaching England full time.
Do you know what the worst thing about it? We've moaned about this now for pretty much 40 minutes. But do you know what the worst thing about this is? And probably the most depressing thing is I'm actively looking forward to us getting out of the World Cup and getting rid of this bloke.
Yeah.
Just so that we can, you know, hopefully get somebody in with a bit of vision. I really hope it's not Scott Robinson. We have too many good options over here that no English club rugby that, you know, hopefully will come into this with eyes open.
Who would you like to see?
Personally, I'd love, and this may shock you, but Mark McCall as director or head coach, Sam Vesti as attack coach, and if not Sean Edwards, then maybe maybe a Kevin Sinfield or something like that.
I mean, I can't argue
would be a really good appointment for the RFU, just PR wise at the moment.
Yeah,
but what Vesti's done for Saints, what McCall's done for Saracens Oblique under a cloud, and what Sinfield has done for Leicester, I don't think could be overstated. I think that would be a good team that would actually play good rugby.
What do you make this supposed RFU shortlist to replace Eddie Jones?
I haven't seen it.
It sits with O'Gara, Edwards and Robertson, I think.
Well, O'Gara won't want it because if Ireland bomb the World Cup, Farrell's gone. So that job then becomes available. He won't want it. Edwards won't want it because he'll be getting absolute bunts in France. And to be perfectly honest, coaching that defence must be the easiest job in the world. Just go out there and smash people, lads. And off we go.
Bonjour, le smash.
Yeah.
Oui.
You know, that can't be that difficult a job. Who were the other people?
Well, the ones I'd seen was O'Gara, Robertson and Edwards.
I mean, Scott Robinson, sure, but I'm not sure how he fits with English rugby. I'm not sure that having someone from the Southern Hemisphere can have an influence over players that play in such a different manner on a weekly basis. I think it's got to be someone from up here, really. And I'm not usually one for, you know, I'm not flag waving or anything like that. I just think the way that rugby's played in England means you have to have a certain mentality to.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it should be someone from the Northern Hemisphere, because I think England are at their best when they play like England, and England's sort of natural style is much closer to South Africa than to say Australia or someone like that. You know, it's good set piece and it's strong ball carrying, and unfortunately for you know the viewer, there's usually a lot of kicking as well. And I think, you know,
well, which is why I think a combination of the people I've mentioned may be good, because you get that, but you'd have Sam Vesti there who would be. Every stage of his career has played brilliant rugby.
Yeah, I think, you know, you want to be able to take your chances when you get them, don't you? You know, you're making your chances, you know, and you know, Borthwick, for, you know, his limitations as an international player is a good, you know, he runs the show well. And I think Sinfield's a great shout, because you're probably right. I don't think Edwards will come now, because unless they make him actually, you know, the boss.
Yeah. They'll have to make Edwards the boss.
Yeah.
Could be an absolute disaster for all we know. He hasn't been the boss, has he?
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, that is the kind of combination I think they should be looking at, rather than, completely. You
know what I want more than anything, what I want is the ability as an experienced viewer.
I thought you were going to say cake.
Yeah. No, the ability as an experienced viewer to watch England play and have a modicum of an idea what it is they're trying to achieve by way of a game plan. And if that game plan doesn't work / isn't working, the ability to alter it either in game or from week to week, which at the moment I don't see as being possible because Eddie Jones is such a belligerent skid mark on English rugby that he refuses to fully admit responsibility for the current state of our team, when really he's the only one that should take any responsibility.
Let me tell you, when that guy finishes after the World Cup, he's going to go full Kwasi Kwarteng on this England team.
Kwasi Kwarteng.
None of it's going to be Eddie's fault. It'll be the players not being
committed,
I don't know, strong, malleable enough. It'll be the press's fault. It'll be the RFU's fault for not backing him. It won't be Eddie's fault.
Yeah. I don't doubt it whatsoever. And I do like the Kwasi Kwarteng analogy. Just blame everyone else. Right. I feel like I've got it all off my chest. I think I'm just about done. We've got a few months now before the Six Nations. There may well be some change. There may well be some change in Wales. As mentioned, losing to Georgia, that was delicious. That Australian comeback at the weekend, that was delicious. And if England weren't in such an absolute K-hole, I'd be laughing all the way to the bank. But, you know...
Was better, Australia or Iran?
I mean, you can barely call Iran a comeback, can you? Iran was just a dismantling. But you know, well, I can't laugh at Welsh rugby now after the way that England have played this autumn.
Yeah,
and they're, like I say, they're arguably in a better place because it's more likely that they change their head coach before the Six Nations than England do, which at least gives them half a chance.
Let's not forget we weren't exactly brilliant in the last Six Nations either,
or the Six Nations before that,
and also the. I mean, we've kind of certainly alluded to it, but we probably haven't actually said it. South Africa were very, very good without some of their best players. I mean, if you watched,
I think we made them look good, mate. I don't think they're a patch on the side they were.
Nope.
True.
They offered absolutely nothing. So they didn't. I say they didn't beat us. They did beat us. So there was the kick. To talk about the game.
That same side lost to Scotland, right?
No, they didn't play Scotland, did they?
They lost to Ireland, didn't they?
They lost to Ireland.
But
kick chase. Go on, Ben. Sorry, mate.
I was just going to say, if you watched France against South Africa 2 weeks ago, you know, that England performance would have just been buried. And it would have been far worse. I mean, by both sides in that game, France, South Africa was a different level. So that's concerning as well. In that, you know, even if we do get out of the group stage, we could just still be demolished.
I've no doubt we'll get out of the group stage of a group of Argentina and Japan. We could well finish second, but we'll get out of the group. But whoever we play next will smash us to smithereens. What I was going to look at is. So South Africa didn't have to do anything to beat us on Saturday. They didn't have to do anything. There was a kick chase. So the kick actually wasn't a bad one. It was outside the 22, so we couldn't mark it. The chase wasn't great. Yes, you could argue Stewart got a little bit blocked off, but as soon as Matey Boy, Odense got hold of it, it was Odense, was it? Orense? I can't remember how to I'll pronounce it. As soon as he got the ball, it was curtains because game over, he was gone. No one could get anywhere near him.
There was a block in the lead up to that try, mind.
Yeah, I thought it was
a block. Yeah,
Doug was just saying there was a but
I'm not too worried away... about that because it was a shit chase.
Yeah, it was just Stewart and the hooker. So yeah.
One pass.
I mean, I think actually South Africa kicked very.
They kick well, yeah. But
they kick very cleverly, I thought, because they most of their kicks at first glance looked actually short, but they were putting them in so much traffic because England had all their blockers and they were actually getting in the way of either Stewart or Freeman, whoever it was that was coming to catch it. They were actually being almost blocked by their own team because the kick was just that little bit shorter. Which you know made it very difficult, and you know their own chase was pretty decent. So I thought that was pretty clever play, really. But you know, at the same time, that is a fairly basic tactic.
Yeah, I mean we made Wilhelmser at times look like prime Dan Carter. the back line. They barely made any passes between them. Dielendi didn't really do anything. They ran him a couple of times. He didn't go anywhere. Like the try they scored, the Etzebeth try shouldn't have been given. Like Itoje's hands as the first man were on the ball, lifting the ball. He told him to leave it when he didn't have to leave it because he was
the first that was
man.
A weird one.
It was so weird. But again, he was played the ball on the floor. He knocked it on. Pick your infringement, but it was given, whatever. So there's 14 points where they've scored that potentially they shouldn't have been given that would have made it closer, but we didn't deserve it. We didn't deserve to win the match. And I'm glad that we were punished, you know, in that way. But the South Africa, as I say, they didn't have to do anything to win. We gave, the, like, as a team, England gave them everything, and that was it. Like they, you say they played well. They did some functional bits in the set piece without being, you know, amazing. And their backs did nothing. So I would say they didn't do that well.
Absolutely nothing.
So you know,
I don't know what else to say, Russ. We were shite, absolutely shite. We are shite.
We should have just started with that.
Yeah. Well, just ended it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just open a podcast. Yeah. So weekend England was shite. Yes. Yeah. Agreed. See you later.
Yeah. Go well.
Go well.
Go well.
Right. So let's stop talking about that now. Any other business, Doug?
Yeah, my dad came down this weekend and we butchered and ate a load of game meat, which was rather fantastic. Go to your butchers and get pheasants, partridges, ducks, all that. It's all good stuff.
Partridge amongst the piggins? Oh, fuck that, didn't I? Piggins? What's a piggin?
Piggins?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Very good. Was it nice, all of your game? Doug's frozen. But what I will say is on the kitchen counter, 10 hours on the game did not render it pleasurable to mine eye. Ben, any other
business? You literally beat me to it. we haven't mentioned Doddy Weir yet, have we?
We have not mentioned Doddy Weir. Well done.
So, yeah, very sad news. Great man. I think Every rugby fan of our age remembers him from the Living With Lions video, as well as being a really good rugby player. And, you know, what he's done to publicise his illness has been amazing. Hopefully, Kevin Sinfield will get, probably should get a knighthood, I think, if nothing else, on the same subject. But, yeah, really sad news. And Yeah, I mean, I'm sure no one that knows him is listening to this, but you know, best wishes to everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, the inevitability of it doesn't make it any sort of easier when it does come, doesn't it? And you know, he transcended rugby, all of the nations. You know, an underrated rugby player. He was actually a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
Just played in a pretty shit Scotland side of that era. So it was unfortunate for him, but a great man nonetheless. So yeah, hopefully all of his hard work won't go to waste, and there'll be some cures for MND at some point in the future. I'm a celebrity. Did you guys watch? Do you watch I'm a Celebrity?
Quick change of pace.
Let's change of pace. I'll end it with I'm a Celebrity. Do you watch it, Ben?
No.
No.
No. The amount of television programs I've recommended to you that you won't watch because, oh, they're not real. Yeah, you're going to sit here and talk to me about I'm a Celebrity.
Just think it's funny, mate.
You're an absolute disgrace. Fat junior cunt.
It was funny. But what was funnier, I was going to say, is, shall we say, the left of the population losing their collective minds over Matt Hancock being in the jungle. And the absolute...
Losing bucket. Their collective minds over Matt Hancock being in there and actually not being that much of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when he's potentially a politician, not necessarily playing a character, but like you've got to be a certain type of person in politics. And yeah, you know, it was a bit odd. And
what kind of person would you be in politics, Russ?
Oh, an utter cunt.
You would definitely be fiddling expenses.
Not guilty.
At least at least you said expenses.
I have got no problem making uncomfortable decisions and decisions that people don't like. I've got no problem saying stuff that people don't
ooh,
like.
You're odd.
I mean, I've got no problem saying stuff that people don't like, you know, whatever. I would like one day, it's not going to happen in my lifetime, but I'd like one day for like a normal person, right? A normal down to earth person with a little bit of a brain and in the head on their shoulders to be in charge of the country rather than some of these fucking public school nonces. May or may not be nonces. I don't know. There's nothing ever proven.
Nonce may or may not be an actual nonce.
But yeah, like this, all of them, and I don't care who tries to tell me that the people in charge of Labour aren't also fucking rich public school fucking idiots as well. Like they're all the same. They're all, I don't know, I've gone from fucking I'm a Celebrity politics. I didn't want to do that. But what I was going to go on to say is the two people, in fact, the two people voted out first of I'm a Celebrity were two black women. And straight away, the narrative all over to Twitter and social media was, oh my God, I can't believe these people. So institutionally racist that these two black women were voted off a popularity contest first, where everyone, quite literally everyone, has the opportunity for an equal vote, and people didn't vote for them. So, you know, whose fault's that? That's all.
There's Russ. It's their fault.
Well, no, it's not anyone's fault. But don't moan about it. I bet they didn't vote. The people that were moaning about those two, the Charlene and Scarlett being voted out first, I bet they didn't get off on the I'm a Celebrity app and cast their votes like the millions of people that were out there.
People fought and died.
Yeah, they did.
People fought and died for our opportunity to vote on I'm a Celebrity, didn't they, Russ?
They did.
And the people out there not voting.
It's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. It's a disgrace. Right. It's time to go. Anyway, we've
been. Will no one remember the great X Factor War of 1943 to 1944?
No, that was Will Young. That was the travesty when Will Young beat Gareth Gates. That was Pop Idol. And I remember, do you remember when the winter I was at Bentley Priory, when me and Doug were, you know, mostly drinking and smoking tubes. It was Michelle McManus. And I don't know why I remember that, but
I thought you were going to say you had to go in and sort out the 1984 MasterChef massacre or something like that.
No. Oh, no. We were not trusted with anything other than the free bar at the Naffy that wasn't free. No further questions, Your Honour. Right. let's get out of here. It's been a pleasure. We may or may not be back next week with something. See, there's no Premiership rugby is shit as well. That can get in the bin.
Positive. We're the worst rugby podcast in the world.
We really are, aren't we?
No, because that's blood and mud. Thank you very much. All speak right, to you later.
Actually, yeah.
Go well.
Podcast Network.